Tuesday, October 10th, 2006, Upon Further Review, episode number 18. That's right, we're officially old enough to vote. I don't know, having to decide whether we agree with somebody or not. Are we really ready for that? Okay, once again, here we are, Upon Further Review. I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And we want to say hello to everybody. Happy Columbus Day weekend. If you happen to be not a fan of Christopher Columbus, then happy, you know, free holiday that you got if you were living in the United States. And if you weren't living either Italy or the United States and you didn't get any holidays, then we're sorry.
Italy gets the holiday? I thought he came out of Spain. Well, I know he's Italian, but I thought he came out of Spain.
Yeah, but he's Italian. I don't think Portugal is, you know, sending up fireworks. I guess they could be.
Actually, you know, a lot of people didn't get this holiday off.
I don't know
if it's just a New England, and you have to be a state worker in New England to get the holiday or something. Because my mom worked for the city in Seattle, and she didn't get the holiday.
They used to do it at Brandeis, where I got my PhD. They would be like, you know, they decided essentially that, you know, we're not going to give you Martin Luther King Day, and we're not giving you Christopher Columbus Day. So from all sides of the liberal conservative spectrum, okay.
You didn't get the day off.
Yes, pretty much. Unless it was a Jewish holiday, in which case you got every Jewish holiday off in creation, which is...
That's probably why they didn't give those holidays off, because they did a lot of those Jewish holidays.
Well, you better believe St. John's gave it off, because St. John's is like, Christopher Columbus. Oh, yeah. Anyway, we want to say hello to everybody out there and welcome everybody into our show, and thank you guys all for listening. And I want to say before we get into the show proper that Clea and I went on a little trip this weekend. Because we had two comments this week, one from Bernadette and one from Tim. Bernadette said that she was hoping that she could get a GPS. We reviewed GPSs last week, and she said she wanted to get a GPS with Sean Connery's voice, but she's sort of itching to buy one. And then, which, you know, I'm sure Clea would agree on the Sean Connery point. And then Tim was saying that he wanted one for his motor scooter, but he couldn't really justify it.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Tim, I don't think that's true. I think that you can justify a GPS because you never know when you're going to get into traffic. Because Clea, my dear wife, has something to say about GPSs. Now, people will remember that last week, I wanted to give the GPS a higher rating than Clea did. And the reason, she said it was cheesy, it looked like a TV. Clea, why don't you explain what happened this weekend?
Okay, well, so we had a weekend trip.
Yep.
That started with us leaving, of course, because Greg is involved, late.
Because I was actually putting up the show is what was happening. I was trying to get that show up.
Because
it's all about you guys. It's all about the listeners.
So Greg had a gig Friday night at 10:30 in Boston.
Yes.
And it's the Friday night before Columbus Day holiday weekend.
Yes.
And it's New England.
Yes.
So there's traffic.
Yes.
And we left at 5:30.
We left
5 hours.
Yeah. Which is, you know,
to do a trip that's how long?
Normally it's about 4 hours under normal conditions.
Right. But we still should have left more time.
Well, yeah, but
so we're chugging along. Greg the whole time is just a ball of anxiety and, you know, stomach acid saying we're gonna be late.
It's true. I actually morphed into a ball of stomach acid and anxiety in the
You
series.
Pretty much spent like the whole time going, this is gonna be the first gig I've ever missed. I guess just no positive affirmations, no things will work out.
Right.
Right
so
away
the
as
point
we
is,
leave the house, it's negative. Anyway,
right.
I just want to make sure so I can balance things out, Greg.
I see. So
give me that little victory.
So we did that, and we're driving up, and we actually had made enough time that we thought, okay, maybe we're going to get there fine. And then we get to the northern border of Connecticut, where the on 84, between the border of Connecticut and Massachusetts, and that's when, Clea?
There was an accident.
There was an accident, and there was a 10-mile traffic backup in both directions. Under normal circumstances, despite the fact that Clea and I are both good with maps, and Clea is a good navigator and all these things, under normal circumstances, we would have been screwed, because this is a major route. It would have taken us forever to figure out how to get around it. Ladies and gentlemen, I inputted into my GPS detour, and the GPS said to me in dulcet tones, please take a right. Now go 500 feet and take a left. The GPS routed us around the traffic jam and caused me not only not to miss my gig, but to arrive early for it. In fact, to arrive 35 minutes early.
Yep.
And so, Clea,
what
do you have to say to the GPSs in the world?
Good job, GPS.
Is somebody here sorry for what they said about calling it a cheesy TV?
I don't want to say I'm sorry because it does look like a
detour.
Cheesy.
Yeah. I was very excited. The GPS saved us. It did. You have to admit, it did work, didn't it? I
mean, yeah, and actually it was funny. We kept thinking of during that detour and the rest of the weekend, we would try to find the people that also probably have GPS because they were looked like they were doing kind of similar things to us.
Right.
Like we followed one person until we passed them because they were going too slow. That looked, it swore they had a GPS.
Well, first of all, they had out-of-state plates, and they were wandering down these roads. I mean, come on,
they were like,
take right on Duck Pond Lane. We're like, what? Like, there's no way they would have known this path any other way. So, the GPS did its job. I am very impressed. I don't know if Clea's going to want to revise her rating upwards, but I think she has come around to the fact that they can be helpful.
Well, didn't we give it a 7?
I believe so.
I think that's pretty good rating.
I think you're crazy. I think you ought to rate it up because it got me where I needed.
It's a 7, but it earned it now.
Yeah.
It earned it now. And that and...
more updates to come.
we did do the thing that we mentioned that we were going to try. We're seeing just kind of plugging things into the GPS. We did not book any hotels for our...
Well, we were going to have an adventure. We actually said we were going to have an adventure.
We were going to... That was our plan. But it was kind of a stupid plan because, again, I remind you, holiday weekend in New England.
It was fun.
During foliage season.
Oh, it was fun.
So, of course, there was no hotels, but we plugged in lodging, and it had the address and how far away it was from where we were and the phone number.
It works.
So, we called a bunch of places, and we found hotels for all 3 nights.
Yep. So, very exciting. Good job.
I really wanted to go apple picking, so we plugged in Orchards.
Yep. And we did that,
too. And we found Hamilton Orchards, and I called, and they didn't answer their phone.
And Clea, again, was just sort of like, I don't think this is going to work.
Well, I didn't know.
We get there, and it's a freaking apple orchard extravaganza. There's clowns and there's dogs
there's
walking
no
around.
Clowns.
There's like a stack bar and like
but
the president arrives.
But they did have really good apple pie.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
And we got a half bushel of apples. So now we have to like make everything that has apples in it. So
good stuff.
GPS success.
Good job by the
weekend.
GPS. And, it went better than the sound system at the gig did. We were fine. The band was fine. But the sound system at that gig
was bad.
Less than optimal. But that's okay. People seemed to like us. So that was really what mattered, I guess. So,
yep.
So anyway, so for this week, we have 3 things as usual on the docket. We're going to start out by reviewing that behemoth of the online trading sites, eBay. That's right. We talked a couple weeks ago about we hadn't done it yet. And we decided it, no time like the present.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start by reviewing eBay. Then we're going to move on to review a game that we got this weekend when we were up at the end of our trip. We were up at this place called Greenfield, Massachusetts, and there was a big game store there. And we ended up getting a game that I've heard of before but hadn't tried, a card game called Munchkin. And so it's a little bit off the beaten path, but we thought we would give it a review. And so we're going to review Munchkin next. And then we'll finish up by reviewing a podcast that was submitted to us for review by somebody else. Patrick Fogarty, the guy who runs the Armchair President podcast and who is married to Mignon Fogarty, by the way, asked us to review Futures in Biotech, which is put out by the people who do This Week in Tech, because he wanted an objective opinion. And we're going to give you an objective opinion about the podcast. As to the science part of it, we'll do what we can here at Upon Further Review, but I'm not sure that we're going to be able to comment fully. But anyway, so that's what we've got up on the docket for tonight.
Yep.
A used pink bathrobe, a rare mint snow globe, a Smurf TV tray I bought on eBay. My house is filled with this crap, shows up in bubble wrap most every day. What I bought on eBay. Tell me why I need another pet rock. Tell me why I got that Alpha alarm clock. Tell me why I bid on Shatner's old toupee that had it on eBay.
So, let us start by talking about eBay. I guess pretty much everybody at this point knows what eBay is. In fact, Clea was talking about how there's this song she wants me to use by Weird Al Yankovic that talks about getting stuff on eBay, making fun of the site.
Yeah, you should make it the music clip.
Okay, well, maybe I'll do that. eBay is basically an online auction site, so you're able to sell anything in your possession, basically, or buy anything in your possession. And the way it works is that you put an item up for sale, let's say, and you'll put a certain date and time during which the the auction will run out. During that time, people who are searching the site will find your particular item. They'll put bids in on it, and then the highest bidder pays you using PayPal, which is, you know, an online payment service, or they can also sometimes send checks or credit cards or things like that. And once you get the money, you send the order. And you can get anything on eBay, all the way from technology and, you know, to antiques to a house with a woman built in. This is actually true. Somebody sold on eBay a house, and if you bought the house, you got the woman who currently owned the house, like, as you, that she would become your wife in addition to getting the house. I'm really not making that up. So eBay is one of those incredible internet viral marketing sites where pretty much you can get and do anything on eBay that you want, broadly
right.
speaking.
And you don't pay any kind of fee until sold.
Right.
So you could, if you're willing to take the time, put your thing up on eBay and see whether or not it sells. And then if it doesn't sell, you know, all you did was lose your time.
Plus, you can put a reserve on it, too, so you can say that it has to sell for a minimum of X amount. And nobody can
right.
see that. But the point is, once the reserve has been met, then you know that you're not going to, you know, run the risk of losing any, you know, any, like, really getting screwed on an item that you wanted to sell.
Right. And obviously, another thing I would think most people would know, but just in case you didn't, is that there's a number of companies now, large companies and small mom and pop shops, where you can drop off your stuff and they do everything for you.
Yep.
One, I think, is called I Sold It on eBay.
Right.
And
I think that's actually a chain, actually. I sold it on eBay.
I was going to say, yeah. It's a chain. It has a website. They're all over the place. I was actually thinking of using their services just for the heck of it.
Yeah.
And then there's just actually right up near Greg's mom's up in Canton, Connecticut, there's a...
Holla, all our Canton listeners, which is basically my mom, I think, right now. But if there's other Canton listeners, you know.
Hello.
Hello.
There is a place just right off one of the roads that says, we sell for you on eBay. Or so I guess
right.
that's the title.
It's required if you own one of these stores to make sure that you have a number for the four and U is just the letter. Because everything is like, we sell for you, you know, like everything. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Greg's making that up.
Yeah.
But anyway, these people charge you a percentage of how much you sell it for.
Right.
They'll take the picture of it. They'll put it up. They'll monitor it.
They'll ship it and all that
and
stuff.
And they'll handle all that stuff. You
Which
just
nice.
Drop it off and
yeah.
and reap the benefits.
And I think that one of the things that eBay has done is I think that it's really altered the way that people are able to go and look for things. I mentioned that when I first tried to get my GPS unit, I went onto eBay initially and, you know, the prices, and we'll get to that when we talk about some of the cons, the prices were not as low as I was hoping, and it ended up being that I ended up getting it through Amazon instead. But the point is, anything that I could theoretically have wanted, I could have found on eBay. If money is not an object for you, you really can find anything on eBay, like seriously. If money is an object for you, then it depends on what it is you're getting.
And that's kind of what brought me to my question that I wanted to raise, is I really wonder if eBay is on its way out.
Oh, really?
Because I feel that there's enough legitimate companies now that can sell you things that are not used
yeah.
for a reasonable price. I mean, yeah, you don't get to bid, but I mean, I just wonder if there's so many things, like when we did talk about eBay a little bit on the MepReport 49 with Russ, and mm-hmm. he talked about there are some, was it called Snipe?
Right.
There are some programs that people can use. They'll set how much they actually are willing to spend on something.
Right.
The program will then place the bid at the particular time.
Right.
And so there are instances where programs can kind of like be feeding off of each other and upping the bid. And all kinds of things that can happen where I just almost feel like it gets a little bit out of control. I wonder if the days of getting a great deal on eBay are gone.
Well, I wonder, yeah, it's a good question. And I wonder if it isn't partially, because you notice there's a new thing called eBay Express, which as far as I can tell, is basically just a link to online stores that sell you things new and relatively quickly. And so, you know, they may even be aware of this themselves. I mean, part of what it is may be that eBay has sort of revolutionized the online buying circumstances of these sites. And as a result, it's sort of become a victim of its own success. And at mm-hmm. that time, basically what everybody does is, I think that eBay is going to become a repository for the real oddball items that stores will never sell. Like, if I've got, you know, a Jimi Hendrix t-shirt from, you know, 75 or something like that,
mm-hmm.
no store is going to sell that to me, you know, at least not a used one. But people are going to be able to sell things like that. You know, it's like they're going to be able to sell knickknacks and things of that kind. But new stuff, you know, getting, because that's the thing. One of the big problems I have with eBay is that because this auction thing is in place and because of the programs like eSnipe and things that drive up the prices,
mm-hmm.
they soar so quickly that they quickly go out of reach. You know, I ended up buying this mic setup that we have here. This mic that I have and the mics altogether probably cost about $200 because I shopped around. I used musicians' friends. friend. I did these other things. If I had bought this thing on eBay, I guarantee you I would have ended up spending about the same or a little bit more, and I would have bought them in all likelihood refurbished or not new. Because if you buy not new, you get it at the absolute, or you buy it new, excuse me, you get it at the absolute top level of retail. Because what they'll do is they all started at this low bid level. So they'll all start at saying, you know, the bid starts at $50. But then they give people 4 or 5 days to bid on it. And those people who don't naturally bid and boost the price up, the programs like eSnipe and these other things boost them up so that you end up spending more money anyway. So you think of it, you're like, oh, I started out at $50 and I outbid somebody. And it's like, by the time you add in shipping and everything else, the only thing you've really gotten out of it is the thrill of the auction, really.
Right.
And you haven't really gotten any benefit in terms of prices. So I'm not sure what can be said about that, because eBay is really just sort of a clearinghouse, like a big market for people to sell things to each other. So there's not much they can do mm-hmm. to regulate prices. They can regulate people spending money and, like, you know, and not actually getting items. They have ways around that so that you don't actually lose money.
Right.
So they fixed that problem. But they haven't really figured out, I think, a problem how to keep the prices at a reasonable level. And
right.
it's basically just, well, it's what the market will bear. Well, no,
right.
it's what the market will bear and what the electronic programs will keep you from doing, you know?
Right. I mean, that's my thing. I mean, I know that there are people, although I wonder if they still exist to the extent that they did at the beginning of eBay, where they would, you know, quit their jobs, or they'd have a part-time job where they bought and sold things on eBay. They would, you know,
I think there's still a good
go
amount of people
to a
that
garage
do some of that.
Sales, and yeah. then they would sell them on eBay. You know, they'd find good stuff and then they'd yeah. price them and sell them on eBay. I don't know. Like, I have a huge pile of stuff that I was thinking of selling on eBay, and I have no idea whether or not it will work. I have actually tried to sell one thing on eBay back, oh gosh, it must be 5 years ago.
Yeah.
When I changed cell phones, I had a cell phone that had every possible, like, attachment thing that you could possibly want. And I was like, you know what? This is a nice little package. I should try to sell it on eBay. And no one placed any kind of bid on it. No one was interested at all. So it didn't sell. And I wonder if that's going to happen with any of our stuff. Like, I have a feeling, like, none of it's going to sell. Because we have a bunch of stuff that we want to sell. Like, we want to sell my
laptop. We should just do, like, an upon further review eBay. Like, if you
yeah.
guys want to bid on our stuff, we'll, like, tell you what we the one thing I think that I would hope eBay wouldn't go down because of is on the basis of recycling. I mean, in a way, it is nice to get new items because you know what you're getting. On the other hand, you know, we are in this world getting so much of this, you know, like, new stuff and just, oh, buy new. Like, even the cell phone mm-hmm. things. I was listening to a report about this the other day where the number of used cell phones now that are going out there, where people are discarding and upgrading their cell phones, is such that it's going to start to become, you know, a landfill hazard, a chemical hazard. How do you deem it? Like, cell phone to cell phone, it's not a lot of stuff, but if you put all the cell phones together, that can be a problem. And so eBay, would seem to me, would allow people to recycle things without going out and buying new things from these companies. But, you
yes
know,
and
I don't
no
know.
Though, because you come back to the previous point that you were making, the one difference that eBay stands above themselves is that they provide the auction appeal. There are numerous other sites like Craigslist that we reviewed earlier
right, right.
where you can do that. You can recycle things. If you have a bunch of stuff that you don't want to just toss, you want to try to give away or maybe sell for $5, you can do that on Craigslist.
Yeah.
But no, you're not going to be able to place it for the bid.
To bid the highest bidder.
For the hope that maybe you can make more money on it. I mean, that's really the point of it, right?
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
the thrill of the auction. And I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is that I feel like the thrill of the auction to possibly get something for really cheap, I feel, is no longer there for eBay.
Yeah.
The
could
thrill
well
of
be.
The auction, and that you might make more money on something that, and you could sell something for a really good amount, might still be there for eBay. But I wonder if you can still really get good deals on eBay.
It's also so big now, and there's so many things being listed and sold, that I think that's also gotten to be part of it too, is that it just sort of feels to me like you're just walking through a massive warehouse. You know, there's 1,000 units of this, and there's 600 units of that. And yes, you can sort them and you can filter them, and they do a very good job of that. But I wonder if there isn't a little bit of the novelty of it is worn off to a degree. And maybe that's part of it.
I don't know if the novelty has worn off, but it has gotten bigger. I mean, you can sell car and car parts there now.
Yep.
Anything you could possibly want.
Apartments from rent.com. They connect with half.com, which is a book thing.
I had a friend.
Eminem is selling his Nike shoes, babe.
Oh, can you place a bid?
Right now.
Right, uh-huh. I had a friend that used to go to Brandeis University, and at the end of every semester, she would hop in her car and go around to all of the dump sites, all of the garbage places on the campus, and pick up everything that people were getting rid of. because you have a bunch of upper crust white kids who didn't want anything anymore, so they would just toss it. So she'd pick up computers, radios, books of no end, laptop, everything she'd pick up. And then she'd go back to her apartment and she'd sort it and she'd sell it. She sold a lot of books on half.com and she sold other stuff. Who's elsewhere? This? I'll tell you offline.
Okay.
And then whatever she couldn't sell online, she'd do a garage sale, and then whatever didn't sell there, she would donate to charity and, you know, do a tax write-off. So she had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, well.
I mean, she did it. So, I mean, what I guess what I'm trying to say is from a buyer perspective, I wonder if the thrill and the deal of eBay is still there. But definitely for a seller's perspective, it seems like it's still there, and it seems like there's a lot of possibility, but I'm not sure.
What do you want to do for rating?
I want to give it a 6.
Yep, I would have said a 6 too, because I think there was a point where eBay was better than it is now, and I know what you mean. I wonder if they haven't lost their way a little bit. A 6 for eBay. We'll see. You know, if anybody has some super auction eBay story that they want to tell us about, please let us know.
Yeah, post it.
By the way, I should have mentioned that you could find eBay at ebay.com. The next item on the docket for tonight is a quirky little game called Munchkin, and you can find it at www.sjgames.com/munchkin, as in the donut or the guy from Wizard of Oz, /game. Steve Jackson Games are the ones who put this out. Steve Jackson has done a ton of games over the years. This is not, by the way, for those of us who are gamers in the audience, and that's probably rather obscure, but this is not the Steve Jackson in Great Britain who does all the Warhammer stuff. This is Steve Jackson down in Texas who did Car Wars. He did the Illuminati game, if you've ever heard of that. He's done some other stuff, GURPS and things like that. And this game, I think it first came out, I believe, in 2001. And it and its sequels, and boy, are there lots of sequels, has won a ton of awards for being a very quick and quirky game. I guess the best way to explain it, Klee and I actually played it before coming on the air to review this. I guess the best way to explain it is it's a card game.
I won, by the way.
Yeah, she actually crushed me into the dust. It was terrible. But it had to do with the fact that I kept getting cursed and you had like the boots of butt kicking and the horny helmet.
I won, Greg.
Yeah. Anyway, so this game is basically two decks of cards. There's a dungeon deck and there's a treasure deck. And basically what happens is you start out the game as a level one human. Your job is to get to level 10. And basically,
a level one human with no class.
Level one human with no class, yes. And then they laugh about that in the instructions. And basically as you draw cards throughout the game, you get treasures, and which can help you fight monsters. You fight monsters. When you beat a monster, you go up a level. If you lose to a monster, you go down levels, and there are curses and things that can happen to go through as well. But really what this is a parody of all of the sort of role-playing D&D / a little bit of MMORPG stuff that you could ever imagine. If you've ever done what's called a dungeon hack, if you ever played a game with friends, D&D or whatever, where you just, you know, walked around a dungeon basically just whipping your sword out and, you know, hacking at anything that moves, you understand a little bit what this game is all about. And there's, in the heart of every role-playing gamer, there's a little bit of love for that early D&D experience of just, ooh, what kind of loot did I get? What kind of cool treasure did I get? Ooh, what monster did I just beat? Mm-hmm. That's really what this game plays into, along with a quirky sense of humor. So,
but it's a very simplified version. It's very straightforward. There's two types of cards, the dungeon cards and the treasure cards.
Yep.
You get cards of what kind of race you are. You get cards around what kind of class you are. There's benefits to different ones. You can be a cleric. You can be a warrior.
But it's all very...
You can be an elf. You can be a dwarf. And that will decide what kind of other cards you can use or what cards you can't use. And then there's different monster cards that you draw and you decide whether or not to... fight. You can roll to flee. Otherwise, you don't roll. You just simply go by how many levels and bonuses you have around whether or not you can beat a monster. So it's very simple.
And the monster names are funny. You fight things like the Bulrog, Pikachu.
Reference
as opposed
to
Pikachu.
Lord of the Rings, Pikachu. Reference
Pikachu.
Pikachu.
What's the other one? The gelatinous octahedron. Oh, Pikachu. Mm-hmm. Sorry. The gelatinous octahedron. The gazebo. I actually fought a gazebo, and the picture just has this big gazebo with eyes looking down at you, and it's like you must face the gazebo.
You can get things
alone.
Like the boots of butt kicking and the orc,
the horny helmet,
and the horny. Yeah, I mean, it's just
the staff of napalm. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, it's you know, and it's designed to be quirky. And the thing about the levels too, it really is very simple. You get a card that has like a helmet of courageousness or something that gives you +2. You add your level, whatever your level is, 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever your level is, plus the whatever you have, like a helmet. That's your number. You look at the monster. If your number is higher than the monster's number, you you win. Like, it's as simple as that. Right. And so it's clearly not designed to be a heavy thought game.
Right.
It's designed to be sort of speed game and stuff.
And that gets to my negative. I find games that err very much on the side of luck to be frustrating, obviously, because I like to consider myself a good gamer and intelligent. And so when it takes away my ability to mastermind a win, I get frustrated.
So can you say that when you said earlier that you beat me, that luck was a factor?
Luck was a factor, but in the end, I won.
Through fate.
Even after you stole, you thief, because he was a thief.
Right.
He stole my boots of butt kicking.
What do you want me to do, man? I'm a thief. It's my job.
Actually, I think you like failed three times at stealing.
Yes.
You actually ended up having a card.
We get back to the luck thing. Yes, it's very irritating. I was finally just like, blam, I take it there.
Exactly. That exact same thing. I won the game. You know, I worked hard. I tried to maneuver certain things so that I could win. But there is a part of me that feels like I didn't really win legitimately because, you know, it's a lot of it's in the draw of the cards. And I don't like that. I don't like that it's all in the draw of the cards. But in the end, this is a very simple game. So it's a nice game to play with a group of friends. You can do it when you're drunk and having fun in a party. And it's a game that I think D&D people will enjoy and people that have not heard anything about D&D. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to get it. So our friends that maybe aren't as fond of playing games.
The ones that we haven't gotten rid of. Because you don't like playing games?
That's,
right.
That's tough when it's your best friend
okay.
and she's not a big gamer. But she's trying.
Yeah, she's trying. Catherine tries. No, she likes some games. We've played some games that she likes.
She'll like this because she gets to screw the other players.
Right.
She's all about that.
If you're a fan of the old Piers Anthony books, and I don't know why you would be, but if you're, this is just my personal bias, he was the one who did a lot of the stuff that was called like mything persons, mything in action. Like it was all these puns and things like that, very pun oriented. This is stuff that you'll like because it's the same kind of humor. Like Munchkin 2, Unnatural Acts, AXE. Munchkin 3, Clerical Errors, you know, as in Cleric, the character Cleric. You know, Star Munchkin 2, The Clown Wars, as opposed to The Clone Wars. Like, you get the idea. There are a lot of sort of that kind of punny humor. And I wasn't lying when I said there were a lot of expansions. There are literally four expansions that I see for the original Munchkin. There's Star Munchkin, plus an expansion. There's Munchkin Fu, which is like a Kung Fu version, plus an expansion. Munchkin Bites, which is like a horror expansion. A horror game, plus an expansion. Super Munchkin, Munchkin Impossible, Munchkin Cthulhu. I mean, you get the idea. There's just tons of Munchkin stuff. And one of the clever things they do on their website is if you buy a shirt that says, like, the hero shirt of Munchkin or something, anyone wearing the shirt playing the game gets bonuses, like, in the game itself, which I think is clever. So it's well-marketed, and it's won a lot of awards because of the speed of the game. But I agree with Clea that luck plays too much of a factor. And I also think that there's an aspect of the game that isn't necessarily going to work for you. I mean, I like games where you build resources and where you kind of gradually work through things, and then there is some skill oriented to it. In some ways, this is literally a mindless game. So if you're going into it looking for a game that you're going to be like, oh, I can really sort of think through, I'm not sure that there's a lot of thought. It's just mostly sort of drawing cards and seeing what happens. And
there's a matter of thought of understanding and figuring out the game.
The rules and stuff, right?
And then after
and by the
that,
way, the rules could be a little clearer at times. Like, at least we figured it all out. It's fairly clear. But once, it took a while for us sometimes to figure
things,
out interactions.
And there's some
and
things that I think they leave on purpose vague.
Because they
the
want you to get
it.
Into arguments.
Just for the fun of it. You guys figure it out. You know, there's a cheat card, which is funny that I got it since I usually am the one that cheats. And it says, you know, that you can use on a card or any use of a card that normally wouldn't be able to break in the rules, but okay.
Yeah, like,
so we figured out how
we figured it out. So,
but yeah.
How about a rating?
I started the last one, so you start this one.
I am going to say a 7 for Munchkin. I think that Munchkin is pretty good. I don't like the luck factor. I also, we may have to revisit it when we play it with a bunch of friends, because we played with just the two of us, so it may also change the dynamic if we play with like 5 or, you know, 4 or 5 people. But I would say a 7.
I think that it will be more fun when you play with more people.
Okay.
But, I mean, I still think there will be the luck factor.
Okay.
I mean, I could sneeze and lose a level, you know, simply by, you know, by the
Not
sneezing.
Not that you did in this time.
No. I did kick your ass.
The hand of God.
Munchkin God.
Munchkin God.
I was really tempted to give it a 5, but...
Wow. But I would be willing to go to 6
okay,
if you
six.
Want to give it a 6. I know it's our second 6 of the day, but no, it's 6-6.
As long
you better not do 6-6-6
no,
or we're going to
we'll
be in trouble.
Bring on the devil.
All right, so a 6 for Munchkin. Our last review of the day is in our podcast section, and it is called the Futures in Biotech podcast. This is run by Leo Laporte, who runs the This Week in Tech podcast, which is huge, and a lot of podcast listeners will know about it. He has a bunch of different podcasts, and Futures in Biotech is one that he does with himself and a guy named Marc Pelletier, who I think is a PhD from someplace. I can't remember, but a lot of PhDs, you know, end up on this mm-hmm. show. And basically what Futures in Biotech is a podcast that comes out. It's not regular yet.
They have about five episodes,
and they've come out sometimes once every few weeks, sometimes once a month. So they sort of come on and off. Now, part of the reason for that, each of their shows is about 45 minutes, and in every episode, they interview some major scientist. And they have some big shots. They've interviewed people from MIT and from Yale and mm-hmm. a whole bunch of different people talking about different subjects within the biotech field. Now, Clea and I are going to be very upfront about this, okay?
Well, you can be. I'm not necessarily going to agree with you. You're going to say that we couldn't necessarily speak to the content, but I feel that I can.
Well, I mean,
being the person that didn't take biology for non-majors.
Hey, excuse you. If you understood some of the stuff with microarrays, then God bless you. I mean, I certainly understood a basic thing of what they're trying to do. And in the process of interviewing these people, they try, I think, to reach out to a more of a generalist audience. But I don't think that this is a generalist science audience.
No.
I think that they're reaching out to a generalist science audience, not a generalist audience.
Right.
So if you're not really interested in science, this is not going to be your bag. If you are interested in science, this is possibly going to be your bag, depending. I think what they do very well is in coming up with a lot of sort of trendy topics, getting good people who
right.
clearly know a lot about the subject to talk about them.
And people who are able to explain their topic.
Yes, in a relatively clear way.
And in a relevant way to
yep.
average day person's life.
In a clear and relevant way, no question about that. What I don't think they do is try to make it clear enough so that people who wouldn't normally care much about science, not people who hate science, but people who are just sort of neutral about it. I don't think you would pop this into your player and say, ooh, this is really interesting, even in the way that Absolute Science that we reviewed is. I mean, I think this is more of a specialist's podcast, to be honest.
Right. They are speaking about specifics. They're going to be talking about the specifics of DNA, using words that speak to that, not always giving the definitions of them. But I do think is an important thing I wanted to add to the opening of what you said, Greg, is that we listened to a couple, as we usually do, and one of the ones that we listened to was number 5, the most recent one. And in the opening of number 5, I think it's on number 5, where they said that they have a number of ones, but they're slowly releasing them in order to not overwhelm people or something like that. So I do think that I don't think it's simply a matter of that each episode is so difficult to produce that it takes them a month to do it.
Well,
I don't think it's that.
It shouldn't be, because there's really not much to the production other than just them sitting interviewing the people.
I
mean, like, there's a tiny little music at the beginning, tiny little music at the end.
Right.
The audio quality is good, but there's no music even while it's going on. There's no breaks. It's just sitting down and interviewing someone.
Yeah, so
and
I guess I don't quite
them,
understand
so.
Their reasons for spacing them out once a month.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if they weren't maybe even joking a little bit about that and just being like, oh, well, we are spacing them out because we don't. Because it's hard for me to imagine.
They had so much material. Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, I think that the hosts, which are, as I said, Marc Pelletier and Leo Laporte, do a good job in the process of the interview. I think they do mm-hmm. a good job in sort of leading their guests through various questions
yes.
and things like that.
Yes, and they ask good questions.
Yes. Yep, definitely. And these are obviously all extraordinarily intelligent, all PhDs. I mean, they're all very intelligent.
I mean,
smart
sometimes
people,
even
so.
The questions that they make are ones that the professionals that they're interviewing say, oh, good point, and they think about that and discuss it. So
yeah.
obviously, you're not just having some, you know,
yep.
stupid idiot asking stupid questions.
My concern, again, and we've talked about this before, has partially to do with audience. I think that if people who are listening to this are people who like science and are willing to sort of, you know, sit and listen to a rather dry interview, then I think that it's going to be successful. But I've got to admit, this is not the most fascinating stuff right out of the box. I mean, it can be intriguing, it can be interesting, but it's often very dry. The guests that they have tend to be people who are very good at explaining things clearly, but not necessarily the best at explaining them interestingly. And I don't mean that as a negative, by the way. I don't necessarily mean, not everybody has to be some super
yeah.
entertainment genius.
And I don't necessarily know how they would do it more entertaining.
Well,
I don't know.
Okay, well then maybe that's the subject itself. I mean,
yeah.
but see, I consider myself to be someone who, although I did not, you know, spend a I didn't have a lot of interest in sort of getting into the nitty-gritty of science. In a generalist way, I find science kind of interesting, and I find the different things that they discover in science to be interesting. I don't really think a show like this speaks to me directly because I don't think I'm interested enough in the biotech field. I mean, you know, there was a point about 25 minutes in where the guy's like, you know, off on this thing about microarrays and fluorescent connections to, you know, matrix concepts that I was like, okay, this is a little bit beyond what I would normally do. And that's fine. I mean, it doesn't have to speak to me, but you need to be aware going in that unlike absolute science, as I said, this isn't even for necessarily a generalist audience. It has to be somebody who has an interest in science and is willing to commit the time necessary to listen to these interviews.
Right. I mean, but however, there are some instances where they're choosing topics that more people might find interesting. For instance, episode number one that we listened to. Sorry, it was two.
Yeah, it's Futures in Biotech, Dr. Leonard Guarento on aging. It was about a gene that was implicated in aging.
Right. So obviously a topic such as aging and the possibility of prolonging life is an interesting topic. And one that most people might, if they saw that, might, oh, I'll listen to it for a little bit.
Yeah, but only a little bit.
But only a little bit. There was, the structure of the interview might have been better in such of breaking out, these are our findings, these are the implications, you know, breaking up the sections a little bit so that it could be, you could lead us a little bit more into where do we go from, you know, where are we, where were we, where are we now, and where do we go from
here?
Yeah,
I would even say breaking up the interview directly by saying something like, you know, we have a couple of listener emails, you know, like, and maybe giving people information, these people are going to be on, are there any questions you'd like, and maybe choose two of them.
Yeah.
Maybe break, I mean, I hate to say put in a music theme, because I know lots of podcasts do that, I don't think you should do it just for that reason, but something to break up just the, so what do you think, blah, da, 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 forever, like breaking up kind of dynamic.
They did kind of, again, they were good interviews. They did kind of create a discussion, which is good, but I just felt that for a layman, it was a little bit difficult to see where all of the pieces came together.
Right.
And so I think that if they could organize it a little bit, it might make it a little bit easier for us to grasp. And then, you know, in number three and four, they're talking about, you know, the Human Genome Project, where does it go from here? And obviously, Human Genome Project, that's huge. That's important to everyone. But then when you get actually to listening, that's where it can be a little bit more difficult if you don't have that biological scientific savvy of being able to sit there and listen to it and stay focused.
I am fluctuating between a 7 and an 8. I don't know. My thing is that I feel like an 8 is a little high. I feel like I want to give it a 7. I don't want to go really low because I feel like that's sort of me allowing my own lack of interest in specialist science, which I think this appeals to in many ways, as I've already said, influence me. And I don't think that's totally fair. On the other hand, from the perspective of a podcast itself, I think it could be designed or done in a more interesting way. The topics are interesting, but the presentation's not that interesting.
Because when people have to understand when they deal with this medium, you're not talking visuals, you're not talking special effects, you're talking only one sense. And that's difficult to make it so that that's intriguing, make it so that's interesting. And
yeah, exactly.
I feel like if they're not writing in a newspaper, they're not creating a television broadcast.
They're not even doing a vidcast.
They're doing a podcast. And so with that in mind, I feel like they need to take that medium into consideration and how people will find that interesting and how they'll be able to absorb information.
You're thinking more of a 6, like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then we'll call the
we'll
devil.
Complete Well, we'll beat him with our boots of butt kicking from Munchkin or whatever. Yeah, I tend to agree. And as I say, what Clea just said, I think, is the best way to put it. The idea that you need to consider your medium. I the content itself seems to be there, albeit a little bit dry. But I think, in general, the rating of the show itself is a production, a podcast, really, which is what we're reviewing it on the basis of. I think that has to be taken into account as well. So a 6 for Futures in Biotech.
Yes, but please do take a look, because they do have some really amazing people that they're interviewing and some amazing topics.
Yes, and so that's very important, absolutely. And so if you're a biotech professional, you know, this is right up your alley. Do not walk to the website, which you can find at www.twit. yes, it's twit. I know everybody laughs at that. www.twit.tv/FIB.
Right. Twit has at least, how many podcasts do they do, honey?
Like a bunch of them, like
12
five
or something.
I don't know, a lot of them. Yeah.
So Futures in Biotech is one of them.
That's the one. So thanks once again for listening. We will see.
Did you see
guys
the newspaper that Starbucks has said that they're going to have up from 12,000 stores in the world to 40,000 stores? I don't know what the timeline is.
Oh, okay.
But I just saw that.
So Bernadette's going to be real big on that. Hey, Bernadette, I heard they're going to make 10 right around your house. Oh, gosh. Well, we'll have to take that into account. We'll see you guys next week for episode 19 of Upon Further Review. And for Upon Further Review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
Have a good week.
The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Bravo!
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good,
it
though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!